These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarracht I aon of chacht ar a chorp, agus suiligam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarin gribhan ar cárstan I lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Nau ni vin aon dar darach sin, vin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
We are only 1 week into 2024, but already we have amassed a huge amount of talking points for the latest episode of the Left Wing Podcast. This weekend, we have another round of Champions Cup fixtures. The Lions head coach will be revealed later this week, and we are expecting it to be Andy Farrell. And there's also a small matter of the Ireland Six Nations squad being announced next week and the identity of the new captain to be revealed. So all that to come on tonight's episode of the Left Wing Podcast. Will Slattery here, delighted to be joined by Luke Verstrell and Rory O'Connor in studio. And Rod, we might start with the squad and the identity of the captain. You know, we were talking a bit off air. It's funny that, like, this time, you know, last World Cup cycle, it was obvious that Johnny Sexton was going to be appointed. He was a senior man. He had already announced he was, you know, staying to battle on for another cycle. This time around, there's a load of candidates. We were kicking a few around off air. It's a bit of mystery round. I want to ask you kind of a two-parter. Who do you think will be announced when the squad is announced as the captain, and who would you pick if it was up to you?
That's a good question, Will. I don't know the answer to who do I think will be the captain, because Andy Farrell hasn't done any media since he since the World Cup. That post-match press conference, which was, I think, was aired live on Virgin, like, he didn't do anything the next day. You know, he hasn't done anything since. We haven't heard from him at all. And as such, there's been no indication as to his thoughts, and really there's been nothing in the media apart from speculation and pieces like the one I wrote last weekend, kind of listing out who the kind of contenders are, what the factors are behind it. And I think when I saw Peter O'Mahony being stepping down as Munster captain a couple of months ago now, I kind of, and knowing what we know about Andy Farrell and the fact that Peter O'Mahony is the next man up in terms of seniority, like, so Johnny Sexton and Keith Earls have moved on, O'Mahony would be down the back of the bus with those players. I suppose Keane Healy would be in that group as well, but he's not really, well, he's not a starter, and I don't think he's ever been a captain, and O'Mahony has been a captain. I kind of made a leap to think O'Mahony is probably the next in line, and I can see the merits of having O'Mahony as the captain for the next year as we kind of begin the process of moving towards 2027. And you know, there is the possibility, having seen Dwayne Vermeulen and Dion Fury win a World Cup in their late 30s, that potentially he could go all the way. But even if it was just kind of a transitional thing, I could see the merits of it. But look, from what we hear, he's been downgraded to a Munster contract. It's one of the reasons he stepped down as the Munster captain. And that would indicate that he's probably not going to be the captain. I think if I was looking at...
Does he have to be in a central contract to be the captain? Why would that be the
precedent would be that the Ireland captain would be on a central. So,
but you know, Andy Farrell think, well, yeah, I suppose...
That would be a strange one. But maybe, look, we don't... I'm in the realm of speculation here. Yeah. Doris is the one that I would go with, personally. And I can see why Andy Farrell would like the idea of skipping a generation almost and going with, you know, the player that is probably the best player in the whole squad now that Sexton's moved on, the kind of, you know, an automatic starter. You know, James Ryan, someone we will probably toss around, but is James Ryan an automatic starter in the team now? You know, he got dropped during the World Cup. Gary Ringrose is a contender, but he's quite far removed from the action at 13 and maybe even 14 if things break the way with a couple of injuries. You know, he's not right at the heart of things. There's no obvious contender, and that's the interesting part of it. Sexton wasn't necessarily obvious 4 years ago. A lot of people wanted to go with Ryan and kind of break with the team of the 2018-2019 kind of campaign, but now looking back, it seems obvious that it was Sexton. So I would go with Doris personally, but I think no one has any idea what Andy Farrell is doing apart from Andy Farrell, and if he's spoken to the person themselves.
What does it say about where the squad is at that, like, was it so Johnny Sexton dependent that it's rooted? There's no obvious candidate. Shouldn't there be a case that we're kind of like, oh, it's definitely going to be X or Y? We could list five guys with kind of reasonably compelling cases. Some obviously, as Rudd said, maybe a bit younger than others, but it is funny that, like, you know, Johnny stepped away and there's no obvious person just to be like, okay, he's going to be our captain. Like,
no, I don't think it's that important that there isn't an obvious candidate. I think there's always going to be some kind of vacuum left with, particularly Earl's leaving too, and not sure how long a man he's going to keep playing for, but, like, you know, he's coming towards the end as well. So there will be some serious experience leaving, that will leave soon. So, you know, I think the obvious candidate will probably emerge. I'm not sure it's as important that it's emerged as we speak. I think there's probably some good candidates. I think it's no harm in trying them out. I think Henderson could be a short-term fix for you too, particularly he kind of was the guy who was picked ahead of Ryan. He's very experienced. He's doing a great job in Ulster. His key thing has always been, can he stay fit? It's never actually about the quality of player that he is, I don't think, even though there's certainly some things in his game that you would like him to improve. But generally speaking, he's a big player for Ulster. And they've had, you know, a bit of a resurgence of late. Interesting to see if they can get that consistency we always look for. And he'd be a key guy in that, I think. I think there's probably something there. Like, I mean, Keenan is probably, in my mind, the most settled and probably the one with the least competition. And has a very good track record. Injury-wise, he'd be there every week, but he's too far from the action and hasn't really been a captain either. Ringrose, to my mind, would be, you know, suited to the role, but I think he's got a bit of a challenge on his hands now with Bundy looking like he's locked down that 12 role after the World Cup. He was so, so good in the World Cup, and he might have a bit of a fight in his hands because, you know, you got Henshaw, Hume, these guys hanging around over the next couple of years. So he'll have his work cut out there. So is he a guaranteed starter? I think he probably is, but he's got a fight in Sam's. And then you probably head into the pack. And to be honest with you, I think I always would have felt like Ryan was the obvious candidate. I think he probably still is, you know, just in terms of age. And I think he's playing brilliant rugby, even though, you know, he obviously got injured and struggled a little bit at the World Cup, maybe for a bit of form, but probably struggled a bit off the line out struggling, which I think was probably a team issue, possibly. And maybe a coaching issue. We don't know really what went on there, but it certainly didn't function well. I think he suffered from that. Well, I think he's the best candidate. I think he's respected by everyone. He's well-liked. He's a good speaker. It doesn't seem to carry... I don't think it weighs heavily on his shoulders to speak to the press, even if he can be quite gruff at times. I think he may not have helped himself of late. I think that La Rochelle performance against the referee was very, very combative.
And very public, like it was just a big game that
it was a big one. The argument is that it might have worked in their favour in the end, but maybe that's because Ringrose saved the day by being a calm head.
But if there was no co-captain that day, you know, would it have been a success?
Yeah, that's why I make the point, Will. You know,
that was never held against Sexton, because at the start of Sexton's captaincy, Sexton wasn't popular with referees. He had very public exchanges with some of them. He even threw his toys out of the pram coming off the pitch as the captain in the 2020 Six Nations decider in Paris when Ross Byrne came on. Remember, he had that kind of shaking his head at the camera and stuff, and Farrell stood by him. So I think Farrell's is able to see the capacity to develop and improve these things.
He likes the competitor.
No,
I think he'll have seen the competitor in that coming off the pitch.
What other players can get away with, sure. I think are different.
But he could also see the positive in Ryan and being so kind of, you know, into it that he could, you know,
He was brilliant. And he was so good against La Rochelle. Like, he was the key guy when he went off in the final last year. That's what cost Leinster the game. You know, his like Henderson, I think his injury profile is possibly something that may come against him in the decision. But I don't know
about
that.
I wonder about his in-game strategy when he's... I think he's at his best when he's free of these responsibilities and he's able to just pour himself into the work, because the work is all-consuming. He's a high-volume tackler, carrier, and ruck hitter. He needs to be almost all in on this job. And if you plant the seed of what are we doing with this lineout, what are we doing with this penalty,
I agree.
It's sometimes, I think,
Stade
eeks away.
Stade France 2022.
Which, again, is a learning experience.
But that was a terrible mistake.
I don't necessarily agree.
They were six behind, and they took a three-pointer in the 22 to cut it to three, even though they needed another try anyway. And France went down the pitch and immediately scored a penalty, and it was muddled thinking, I thought.
But like
that's a lesson, five or six,
but these are all learning experiences. So you could hold that against him, or you could say, right, he's been through that, he'll know what to do next time. Henderson's one that I overlooked earlier. A lot of people are clamouring, there's a bit of a clamour for Dan Sheehan as well, as just that kind of really effusive character, very popular, good talker, would wear it well. But I don't know if Dan Sheehan
early
has much
to me for that one.
Yeah. He captained Leinster this year against the Dragons. I think it was the first time
and Doris only captained Leinster for the first time, although he is a former Ireland under-20s captain.
I'm very good in the media as well. I think, like,
both Doris
the
and
communication piece, like, which I don't think Ryan has. Like, you know more than I do.
Yeah, I would disagree with you about Ryan in the media. Like, he doesn't like doing it. And he
really?
Particularly, if you put him in a room with a couple of journalists, he's generally quite good and engaging and he's a good talker. Put him in a room full of cameras, Six Nations week, it weighs very heavily.
Do you think?
On him.
Yeah, I feel like he's good at staying on message.
He stays on message, but like he's not. Well, you know, from our perspective,
the
maybe
captain is the public face of the team as well. Like, and you might think that's bullshit. Like, it doesn't matter for performance. But
I don't think he
values it that highly.
One might think that it doesn't make a difference, but I think it does.
I think that the value on the pitch is overstated, but I don't think the value of the captain is overstated publicly.
That's really not.
Oh no, it's really important to have the right person
on the pitch
there.
Well, you obviously would know.
No, it doesn't matter. Sure, but like maybe it's because I was out in the wing.
Yeah.
Ryan
is already in that. Like, Sexton outsourced a lot of those decisions about points, corner, that sort of thing. Like, Ryan was part of that committee as well. Apparently, Ronan Kelleher is quite vocal in those decision making when he comes on as well. Yeah. I think what mitigates against Sheehan, and probably Tyke Furlong, who's another senior player who I think has captained Ireland in the last couple of years or something.
Remember, he gave that funny interview. It was before a November game, I think.
Yeah.
Captain is a guy who dreamt of, you know, potatoes and sports and stuff. It's funny.
But like, that was the Fiji game that actually ended up proved to be quite damaging for a number of players, including Joey Carberry. But he doesn't stay on for 80 minutes. And Dan Sheehan would regularly be subbed off after 50, 60 minutes as well.
Yeah,
so you really don't want your captain doing that, although Bonga Amanambi was doing it for South Africa during the World Cup at times as well. So
they're a weird case.
Well, like, he played 80 minutes in a lot
he
of
did,
the
no,
cases.
He did, and like, Sheehan has the capacity, like, you know. But so look, we've named probably eight players, which I think highlights how open it is. It's
bizarre that there's not a consensus, or that it's not even kind of, you know, like you as a kind of ear to the ground, kind of. It's like, as you said, Andy Farrell hasn't done any media, so there's like,
it's quite a tight ship now, Ireland. I know the team does still generally get out, but like, this kind of information doesn't often get out. they're naming the squad next Wednesday, the 16th. They flagged that out in advance, so we'll know then. But Farrell tends to name for windows, but he did that with Sexton. He backtracks in the hallway through. So
can I float one more? Tyke Byrne is not an option. I think he's a live option for that Munster one, I think.
Yeah.
But based on that, it seems to be a very live option for that to me. Is he Ireland? He's guaranteed to be in the team. I think he's, like, of all the players, and like, I think he's a cert to be in the team.
Yeah, they play him
at six if they don't play
him. He's very comfortable in the media. He's a very respected player. I don't see him as being that kind of effuse. And not only them, I remember that Lancaster a couple of years ago came in and gave all the players a personality test in Leinster, and they all came out yellow or whatever the colour is is quiet. They all went to their shape. And I think Byrne is fairly quiet. I think he's happy to let others do the running in terms of the talking and that sort of stuff. But he is a highly respected, very good player. He's never really been seen as captaincy material until now. And the Munster thing is,
there hasn't been a need, though, to really look elsewhere either. So,
and Munster have always had O'Mahony. And like, we're seeing now that they're struggling without O'Mahony as their captain. So I don't see him as being in the frame, but maybe he should be. But I think the other two riders are pretty Henderson.
Ryan seems to me like
Henderson, Ryan, Doris, I think, will be O'Mahony would be in that mix as well. I think Joe McCarthy is an issue for all of them because I think McCarthy's quickly becoming the most, like, I know it hasn't happened yet, but I expect McCarthy to play a big role in this Six Nations.
Particularly the French, English games, you
absolutely
think he's important.
All
there,
the games. Yeah. I just think he's going to be the cornerstone of the Irish pack for the next 10 years. And it's basically who plays with Joe McCarthy.
I don't see that yet. But I get your point. I think he's got a bit of work to do to get there. But the type of player he is, it's definitely in the big games we're calling out for it. Like, he'll certainly be, I think he'll be an important part, but whether we're working our starting team around him, I don't know. I get the point, though.
He could make an impact.
South Africa, France, England, I see, definitely, but I don't know.
The physicality brought against La Rochelle was a big kind of step.
Ryan was unbelievably physical in that, too.
And like the final, as you mentioned.
But for Ryan to have someone like McCarthy beside him just allows him to go off and do what he does. Because if he has someone lighter like Ty Byrne, he's being asked to do the work of a heavier man, which drains you and takes things away. So it makes him a better player. So I think McCarthy's, I really, really believe that McCarthy is going to play a big role in this.
Well, he plays big minutes, I think, no matter what. As in, like, when I say big minutes, I think he comes on at 50 minutes for me, regardless, or 55 minutes. Like, he's that kind of player now where you go, okay, let's turn the knife, or actually, do you know what, we need a bit of help in there. He's that guy for me on the bench, maybe, but
Friday night in Marseille, like, you want him
in your pack there.
So what was your prediction for captain, sorry?
Who? Doris.
Doris, you think he'll be named?
Oof. No, I don't know. He's the one I would back, and I just have a hunch that Farrell might go with him because he is guaranteed, and he has a presence, and the players really respect him, and he's confident. But
gives good quotes.
He does, but like he would go into a room with the other captains at, say, a Six Nations launch, and he would instantly command respect. Like people, I interviewed Tyrone Kino during the World Cup, and Kino was just like raving about Caelan Doris. You know, he has that status of, he is probably this generation. Him and Sheehan probably are this generation's O'Connell or O'Driscoll in kind of the status.
Are they personality wise? I don't see that personality wise at all, Rudds. Yeah, I think playing wise,
these players.
That's the point. Like,
Doris has that. I think Doris can.
The only thing I think, maybe there's more good players.
And I love putting Hugo up, but I think your point about Hugo is that
he's too far away from the action.
Like, I think they would love to make him the captain.
I'm trying to think, is there any kind of fullback captains that have been?
Sure, Gavin Hastings would be the one
Hastings more so.
But Hastings was a great captain.
Well, I didn't think Hogg's captaincy was an issue with Scotland.
He went down with Finn Russell.
That wasn't to do with playing a fullback, though. Like, that was, Hugo Keane. I can guarantee you Hugo Keane would not make those mistakes that Stuart Hogg made.
No, he's cute. He's a smart player.
But in terms of on pitch on the day, like, they recognised that he was probably their best player and they gave him the captaincy. There was many things wrong with Scotland, but I don't think a fullback being captain was the issue.
Yeah, well, kind of the talk of second round stuff brings us onto the squad generally will be named next week. Back three is a big issue. Obviously, Mac Hansen and Jimmy Aram both ruled out yesterday. You know, it looks like James Lowe could be back in the mix, which would be great considering I think Hugo Keenan would have been the only fit kind of starter from the back three otherwise. What way do you think they might go in the back three for that opening game?
I'd love to see Stockdale in there. I've been a pretty vocal in terms of the criticism of him, but I'd love it to work for him. I think he's a big guy. He's quick. He's had a bad run of injuries. I think he was playing. He almost kind of played himself close to a squad spot, I think, just before the World Cup too. So to my mind, he's probably naturally the next guy in, bar Jimmy O'Brien, who was so, so good in the World Cup. So unfortunate, that injury. I hope he's okay. That's not a good area. As a bit of familiarity with issues in the area. That's a serious injury, I think, So hopefully he's okay. But I think Stockdale probably makes the most sense, I think, and Farrell does like him.
Can they play him and Lowe, both two left wings?
I don't see why you couldn't play Stockdale on the right or Lowe on the right. Lowe less so, I think, but...
I'm trying to think if I've ever seen Stockdale play right wing, though.
Yeah, but I don't know. Who's the Balakun then, really? Zeebo has to be in the squad, but is he going to be picked?
He's a left winger. So, if you are to, and look, far more than I do about playing wing at international level, but none of those left footed players, I don't think Zeebo's ever worn a 14 shirt for Ireland. I can't think of it. No. So, you have a fairly decent depth chart. If Lowe's fit, you've Stockdale, you've Zeebo.
Three left wing.
You've Shane Daly down in Munster, who's playing very well as well. So that's four good options in left wing. And then right wing, you've lost Mac Hansen, the starter. Jimmy O'Brien, the guy who came on for him in the World Cup quarterfinal. You've lost Keith Earls, who's retired. And Ganju Conway is retired as well. So that was your depth chart. Yeah. And now you're going to Balakun, who is undeniably quick and talented and a great finisher. Not a bad defender, but they just don't seem to really trust him. Larmour, who they've lost faith in altogether, but is still a quality operator starting for Leinster in European Cup games and playing quite well without really being the Larmour that burst on the scenes. And Calvin Nash, who's starting for Munster, and they like him, was in the wider World Cup squad and is probably ahead of Larmour in the pecking order. But I wouldn't say he's tearing up trees at the same time. And you're going to France in your first game, so there's no chance to ease them in against a Scotland or an Italy at home first before they go for that test. And that's why I think Gary Rimlow is going to play right wing. And they're going to play probably a Bundy. Sorry, I'm speculating, but I'm saying Bundy, Aki and Robbie Henshaw on midfield, at Ringrose on the right wing, and you have incredible defensive solidity. You have Ringrose with that footballer's instinct to be able to do what Hansen does and come in and create and, you know, be a second receiver. He's got experience. And against France on that day, not a lot of on the wing, but he has played a bit of rugby on the wing. And recently, Leinster have been taking off Larmour, bringing on Natai in midfield and shifting Ringrose out to the right wing. So he's getting met reps there as well.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
Yeah, we were discussing it off air, obviously. I think we both were in agreement on that one, that that might be a logical move for them. Gary's unbelievably talented, like one of my favourite players to watch. Got to see him coming up through the ranks. Super talent, you know.
The defensive stuff you've identified, if he was to be put in the wing.
It's different on the wing, yeah.
How would that change, or would it be the same?
I think it's quite simplified on the wing. I think he won't be in that role where he's shooting up. And Robbie's lovely to defend outside. Robbie makes your decisions very, very simple. And it's probably more simplified the further out you get. You know what I mean? You're either goosed or you're not. Generally, most of the damage is done on the inside for the most part. You just have to stop yourself from doing kind of making these mad decisions, which it sounds like he has been told to do that role, that kind of shooter role. And I think he sacrificed a little bit of himself. A little bit of his real quality to me was always that he was like defensively, like such a, like he was a lockdown defender to me. And I think that kind of wild streak and that bravery that he has worked against him in that role. And I think he's lost a bit of his technique. Might be a nice time for him to find that out in the wing. It's still a very difficult place to defend because you've got a kick threat that you have to manage too. But I think Keenan working with him should like Keenan would be nice
Keenan's
to work with.
There.
Yeah, Keenan's nice to work with there. So like Gary's got the pace, he's got the footwork, he's got the nice right foot step that you always like to have. You like to have your winger having their favourite step, generally coming back in field, and then the obvious kicking, you know, if he's stuck and the defender, you know, there's nowhere to step back inside to keep the ball alive. It's always nice to have that right footed kick down the line. Where do you want to go? Long, grubber, whatever you want to do. That's always a nice option to have as a winger. And I think he's comfortable under the high ball too. It's not something that he couldn't learn anyway.
And why do you think Ireland will go with it? I agree that it sounds good. I'm agreeing with it. I like the picture you're about painting, but why do you think Ireland will go for it?
Like, fixture. I think if you had an Italy, a Scotland, or even a Wales at home in your opening game, or even away, they'd have more comfort in putting someone a shot. And they may well do that against Italy in 9 days after the first game. But the fact that it's France away, and it basically unlocks the entire tournament. You know, that is, the whole tournament lives or dies in that opening night.
If you lose the opener, you're probably not winning the tournament.
I mean, there is a route to
France of England at home.
Wales have done that, you know, like in the past. But really, you're looking at the top two from the last couple of years. And Ireland are going there to win this. And I think we'll see a very strong squad name, a lot of continuity from the World Cup. So it's more like if Keith Earls there, if you'd Andrew Conway or even Jimmy O'Brien, I think they go with one of those options. Maybe they go with Balakun. Maybe if someone comes in and trains really well, they promote them and they back them. And Farrell, in fairness, does back players. But the way they've bombed nearly all of these players out at different points would suggest to me that they don't have full faith in them. And like, yes, Stockdale could move to the 14, but you've got a left footed kicker on the right side of the game away from home, and in a game where the kicking battle is going to be really, really crucial.
The argument is though that, you know, if you ask me personally about it, and I play there on occasion on the right wing as well, like I think the one thing that I don't see many wingers doing who have to make the switch is actually you just have to have a decent grubber game.
Because Stockdale does.
Which you do. So like that's why I was saying I don't know if it's actually as big an issue as people are making out. If you think about all your kicks, you know, it's nice to be kicking back in field. It takes the slice is still an issue for you if you're right footed. But as a left footed kicker, like, you know, if you're putting up a Gary Owen, like you're gonna be doing it with time. If you are putting up if you're doing a long kick, you're going to be doing it with time in front of the defensive line. The only one that you really need a right foot for, I think, is the one where you're under pressure, where the tackler is cutting you off and it's going to put you in touch and you want to keep it alive. And I think a grubber is perfect for that, or a chip, which I think is very doable. Like, I don't think that takes a massive, like Debo certainly would be able to do that. I would back him to be able to do that on short notice. And also, you know, the one thing about Debo is that the skills, he's a smart defender too. Now, I don't know how good he is at a really hard up defense, but I still think he's a smart defender. And I think he rarely gets beaten, but he's a smart fan and he's lovely skills. He gives you that same thing that Hansen gives you, where he can open up a team and open up the pitch for you, which is really important, I think, against teams that come hard off the line. And I can't think that a guy with his skills can't learn how to put in a grubber kick if he's under pressure running down the right wing. I just can't see that being an issue for him. So he, to my mind, would make the shift most naturally. But I think Stockdale would be the preference for Andy Farrell. I still think he could learn that skill.
He's got great momentum, Zeebo. And so does Stockdale, actually. And I think the next 2 weeks could be really... I suppose it's only one game because he's naming the squad next Wednesday. And Zeebo, I think, is still touch and go for that squad because he's never been in an Andy Farrell squad. Mm. Whereas Stockdale, they know him. He was very close to the World Cup.
Yeah.
But if he plays... like they go to Toulon this Saturday and Zeebo is out of his skin again, it's going to be very hard to not pick him in that squad next week, especially with the depth issues. And then he gets... then they go home, they play Northampton in the final. And again, they're down numbers. If he plays big in that game, suddenly he's arriving at the camp.
Yeah.
He's confident. Definitely worth a squad place. Like,
I think
he's a 37-man squad.
See, his only thing that's kind of working against him, like he might be good for that. The one thing that you might pick him for is that if you're not picking him on that for that right wing berth, which is a fairly likely possibility, but seeing as he hasn't played, he's been playing fullback. He's so far from, I think, Keenan. I think Keenan's so far ahead that I think, rightly or wrongly, I just think it would take a lot. But I just feel like it's whether Zeebo, the only thing that might work against Zeebo is that he hasn't been in the squads. He has a bit of a reputation for not being, like, he's always good in the rugby training.
Yeah.
But in the other training, like, is he kind of a disruptive presence? Is he, which, you know, he's been in the media, you know, that's kind of unusual for guys who are playing. I don't have an issue with anything. He would be in my squad, but that's definitely something that might work against him.
I agree that Keenan is miles ahead, but I think that in the depth chart,
he should be one Keenan injury away from being who's starting in fullback. Well, Hansen, Jimmy O'Brien,
and Jimmy O'Brien were the next man up. So you've lost that. So you're looking at the next fullback up is probably because Haley's out.
It has to be Zeebo. Sorry,
could Will Addison come back into the mix?
Seems like a long time. No.
Yeah. It does, but he's starting every week for Ulster now.
And Zeebo's playing far better than
him. I agree. And he could, but Addison's injury profile is terrible, but his age profile is probably a bit better. And also, he covers right wing, so he could play there. And Farrell likes him, but I think he's got a way to go. It would be a big leap from where he is now, but I was just throwing him into the mix.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal player. Addison, when he gets fit, but it's been
injury about 2 or 3 years ago. I don't think he's
very smart though, and he would be able to play that heads up game.
But is he as smart as Zeebo? I don't know. I think Zeebo's a seriously smart player, and defensively he's excellent.
I think he should be
sorry, he would be in my team too. I'm trying to play devil's advocate. Yeah, I think is why you might not, and the age profile thing as well. Like, do you now look at the next crop?
Zeebo's 33. Like.
But the one area that Ireland's producing an incredible amount of rugby players at an incredibly high level, but one, there's two areas. Loose head prop, Paddy McCarthy aside, is not brilliant. Actually, the younger guys are good, but there's kind of a bit of a gap in between 20 and 30, really. And winger, there's not a great, like, the throughput of wingers into the system is not huge. You know, Leinster are not producing wingers for their academy that frequently. Like, it's not an area of huge strength. So it's a bit of like a
Nash.
But the two outstanding wingers in the system are both, one's Australian with an Irish mother and the other is a project player from New Zealand. You know, they've had to recruit in that area, you know. So I think that is, I think the fall off from Hansen and Lowe, especially in the way they contribute beyond what the nuts and bolts. You know, Balakun is a really good nuts and bolts, old-fashioned winger. He just doesn't do what Mac Hansen does in terms of coming in and influence the game. The problem is very few players do. Zeebo can.
Zeebo definitely has that. To my mind, he fits the plan.
I think Ringrose could do that as well, if given the
license. But Ringrose isn't an unbelievable... I wouldn't say Ringrose is an unbelievable playmaker. I've never thought that. I always think he's like a really... like, you know, watch him. He's not putting guys into holes. That's not what he does great, I don't think. I've never felt that about him. And other players would feel that too.
As soon as you said that, I just remember him not throwing that pass against Saracens in 2019. No, won that Champions Cup.
I would say it's kind of regular.
He was one of the ones that didn't give a pass in that 30 odd phase end game. It was one of them.
But he's a great runner. He's really fit. He's a great runner. He's a brilliant tackler. Like, Gary has always been one of my favourite players to watch. But he is a runner himself, which is why I think the wing might be nice for him. But I don't think it's because of his playmaking ability.
It's funny, him being put on the wing reminds me of the tactical or the positional switch done in the opening game of the 2019 Six Nations when Robbie Henshaw went to fullback against England when Rob Kearney was injured.
I was calling for that.
Yeah. To be fair, they got hammered anyway, but that also didn't go very well. Going to Marseille, like Thomas Ramos, you know, Billy Barret and Pano are like playing out of their skin.
Is it more of a risk to play him on the wing or play an untested right winger? That's the question Andy Farrell has to debate. I don't know the answer, but I have a feeling they're going to lean into experience, especially for this fixture.
Ringrose is well able. He's a smart rugby player too. Yeah, I just feel like he'd be good.
Stockdale's return being away to France, I could just see that going badly.
Out of position as well.
And
I don't know if Stockdale is the most... I think Stockdale is at his best when he's not thinking. And I think putting him on the right wing is asking him to do things he's not used to doing because he hasn't played there very often and, you know, make decisions and kind of be, you know, we've talked about his defence an awful lot. You know, there's obviously different elements to being a right winger to a left winger. I know they're different sides of the same thing, but there is different elements. I just wonder whether they would fear...
Only really off scrum, you know, there's some kicking stuff too, but like it's more generous for receiving kicks generally because it's a harder kick for the scrum halves who are generally right-footed. But other than that, it's similar. It's only off scrum time where you might lose, where you're, generally speaking, you might lose your nine. If you're on the right wing, your nine might try and your team might just say, you know, we don't want to worry about the blind side. That's unless there's a big wheel in the scrum and you do get your nine back. But that's the only place really these days you would see they're like a massive difference defensively, you know, for the most part. Where it is lovely is if you're a playmaker. Playmaking on the right wing is lovely generally, you know, because you can, if you're drifting in off stuff, you know, you're generally passing with your good hand. It sounds like a silly thing, but generally speaking, you know, it is something that most people find. And I was left-handed or left-footed, right-handed, and it was always awkward. You know, any playmaking role, you're playmaking off your weaker hand, generally off set plays and stuff. So it could be a nice thing for a right winger. I always thought it might be.
Yeah, I like that idea of Ringrose on the right wing. It'll be one of the very interesting kind of selection subplots to follow over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about the captaincy earlier, how there's a bit of mystery around it. You're going to the Lions head coach announcement later this week, and we all think it's Andy Farrell, but you're kind of choking off air that it hasn't really been confirmed yet either. We're presuming it'll be Andy Farrell when you turn up, but, you know, hope he's not getting Warren Gatland again, that he walks out onto the stage.
Yeah, well, we're having the Rugby Writers of Ireland annual dinner on Wednesday, and Andy Farrell is coming.
The chairman, I believe.
I'm the chairman, for my sins. And
Mr. Chairman.
But Andy Farrell is coming, as far as we know, anyway, so... and then a load of us are getting up in the morning, so cursing the date, getting up in the morning, flying to Heathrow. And if Gregor Townsend walks into the room,
try and feed him with beers. Yeah,
absolutely. we will be watching what he's drinking very closely to see how fresh he wants to be. And like even that's planted a little bit of seed of doubt in my mind in that, you know, he often with these Lions things, there'll be dinner the night before or something. But Andy Farrell seems to do things by his own style.
Do they try and sneak them in? Even at dinner, is it always like they kind of go right under the radar, get him out of here, so no one sees him coming in, or no one sees him on a plane over or something?
That's like, that's planted a seed of doubt because it's such a big deal and a big honour in terms of and it's sold.
No one else for it, though.
It's a big Sky Sports thing.
You see him on your Ryanair flight now, arriving into Heathrow. Yeah,
I'd say he's on probably an earlier flight. We're putting it fine.
Look, I'll see you there.
It does. I've been in touch with English journalists who've been on to me, and like everyone thinks this is a fait accompli. And you're right. Like Gregor Townsend was the head coach effectively 4 years ago under Warren Gatland. In 2021 under Warren Gatland, and is probably the other contender, but Andy Farrell's achievements in the subsequent four years.
Watch the last pool game of the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, look, Townsend's a good coach. That's a bit harsh. But
in fairness to Townsend, like, his resources are very different to Farrell's.
Yeah, but Farrell's different achievements and also the fact that, you know, he's been
and
on...
He should stop talking them up.
But he's been on two tours before. Yeah. Gatland's anointed him. He went to New Zealand and put warm-up games in the schedule, won a three-test series against New Zealand with Ireland and beat the Maori once out of two as well. Yeah. That was as much challenging the Irish players and management to cope, but as well as going to the Lions, look what I can do on a tour. Yeah. So I think he deserves a shot. I know you're going to ask, is it the right thing for Irish rugby? And that's another debate. Yeah. But I think in terms of the prestige of the role, I'd say it was part of his renegotiation. Yeah. I think the RFU would have said to him, you go with our blessing in this one, you know, because I think if they'd said no to that, he might not have been as...
It's also nice for them. I think it's a great opportunity for for Irish rugby to develop some other coaches too, who I think they'll have. And I know, Will's grimacing there, but I do think it is. I think it's a really good opportunity to do that. I think, like, you know, there's a very established kind of staff there, I think, for the most part. I know Kat's leaving and all that, but there's people here who, it's hard to move around. It's a good opportunity to give someone a go, right, well, what's this guy made of? Like, what is it? What is he good? Does he have his own ideas? You know, obviously he'll be doing most of the stuff, I'd assume, with Andy Farrell's, like, you know, kind of, I'm sure they'll be speaking over the course.
It's not there's
like
going to be some changes around here.
but there'd have to be, but you'd have to put your own stamp on it to a certain extent too. But I do think that's a good thing.
The national team isn't there to progress the career of Paul O'Connell and Simon Easterby exclusively. Like, the job between now and the 27 World Cup is to win the 2027 World Cup. I don't see how the Irish team's interest.
But giving one of the coaches more exposure, Will, I think, is that can't but be helpful.
The head
helpful.
Coach ultimately, like, so the World Cup draw is being made in January 2026. Andy Farrell will have been gone for, we think, the Autumn Series in 24, the Six Nations in 25, and the Summer Series in 25. So three of the six windows he'll be gone for. You know, you want to get a top seeding. We saw how bad that was at the last World Cup. We ended up with a very difficult draw. I just see, it's obviously good for Andy Farrell to be the Lions coach. I could see why he'd want to do it. I could see why, as Rudd said, the RFU wouldn't want to be like, you're not doing it to, you know, you don't want to kind of piss off your prized employee. But from just the Irish national team's perspective, I don't see how him going to be the Lions coach and taking a season off is good for Ireland looking at it the next World Cup. I can see, oh, you know, you might get a few more players in the squad. It's good for developing him as a head coach. But just for developing the team, I think you want the head coach. Yeah, we've talked about a myriad of selection issues. You know, new captain coming in, and then the head coach is disappearing for a year, even though it's a good thing for him. I just don't see how it benefits the team, like, going forward. Unless either of you...
Sorry, I'm not arguing with you on that point. I'm arguing with you about the... I do think there's some merit in definitely the coaching staff and giving them more exposure. I think that's definitely a good thing.
That's like one maybe silver lining of
that is, but, is a silver lining. But the other one, like, you'd have to say, having your coach around, like, definitely does help, 100%.
The question, I think, is Irish rugby committed to the Lions as an idea? And if it is, then if the Lions come calling for your head coach, you've got to do it.
Yeah.
And the players... I think the 2021 Lions tour was damaging to the Lions brand, but the Lions remains a key part of rugby in this hemisphere.
And
the hemisphere below, absolutely. But, you know, the one we can make the decision on,
yeah,
you know, does the Lions serve Ireland's interest in terms of winning World Cups? You could argue no. Breaks the players. You know, it's a big, big load in the middle of a cycle. A lot of players don't come back the same.
They always get injured after year.
Yes. Yeah. You know, can you be as singularly focused on one tournament? Like, the rugby has to exist outside of those four-year windows. Like, the Six Nations has to matter. The Lions has to matter.
Well, he's new nation the Six series. Nations, that's my point.
No, but he's doing the Lions, which is hugely important to the careers of a lot of the players who'll be playing for him. Yeah. And it's part of Irish rugby's... Like,
it's part of rugby.
It's part of rugby. It's part of the RFU. Yeah. So the RFU are a contributing factor. So I think...
I'm just talking about the Irish team
specifically. No,
but
I get what you're saying.
But you can make the point, and I have seen it made, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, that the Lions is bad for Irish rugby. That going off and sending your best. I mean, if you were picking a Lions series, a Lions squad now, would you have 20 Irish players in that squad? Would you have 15? Your entire team would be going off mid World Cup cycle and playing three. Now Australia, this one maybe is a bit of a gimme, but like, you know, if you were going to South Africa for three incredible tests and Loftus and these places and all the warm ups and all that sort of stuff, and they come back and some of them grow from it and some of them are never the same again. Is that good for Ireland at the next World Cup? Possibly not, but does rugby, is that the singular thing? Like, you could argue yes, but then the RFU would say, well, hang on, we have to kind of thrive as a rugby nation for 4 years. For Andy Farrell's point of view, right, you made the argument against it. The argument for is probably the World Cup's in Australia. So he gets to lead a team to Australia for 5 weeks, experience all the different venues, get up close and personal with the Aussies.
Obviously, and the other teams. And the other teams. Like,
he gets to know all the players from the
other
Six Nations teams.
Scottish,
he gets to advance the cause of, you know, he's a very significant voice in the room. You know, there was controversy last time. Ringrose didn't make it. Ryan didn't make it. Yeah. Although there was some talk afterwards that Ryan opted out. You know, he gets to be the driving force. So a lot of our, if you think it's a positive that players are Lions, he gets to advance the cause of all those players. So there'll be a significant Irish voice there. They get to know those players. It brings up their levels. That's the argument in favour. And then he leads the Lions to a series win in Australia. Glory, glory, and comes back and everyone's buzzing and he's enhanced his career. The Irish players have enhanced theirs. And in the background, what Luke said, you know, Paul O'Connell or Simon Easterby has led Ireland for a year, gained great experience. drop-off. Because drop-off under when Gatland was away wasn't... They never won it, I don't think.
They won the Six Nations one year.
So that's it. I mean,
they smashed England in the last game.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a chance that you win it anyway, you know, without him. And then when Andy Farrell, if we expect him to leave in 2027, you have a couple of coaches there who now have a year's worth of international experience who he can...
Another viable candidate there somewhere who you don't have to go outside yourself, similar to what you've done with Farrell. You might say, well, look, that continuity has been great for
Ron O'Gara is the person who's the person, right, you know?
He could call it, like O'Gara has said, he's open to going as an assistant. So look, I completely understand your argument, and I flip between the two.
That he shouldn't do it, I'm just asking the question,
is it good
for the team? Like, no,
but I think we're making the argument that it's good in some areas, it might be bad in others.
Exactly.
Like, I think your point is completely well taken. Because like you're taking out all the ideas, all the continuity, all the stuff that you built up over your 4 years is now kind of changing. Yeah. Now, I can't help but think that over Six Nations, that Gatland or that Farrell is not going, okay, what are you thinking here? What's happening here? This is what I'm thinking. This is what we're all, like. Yeah. I can't help but think there is some involvement there, even regardless of whether there's... Because like, he's going to be watching all of these players anyway, because he has to. So I just can't see how he's not going to be involved in the Irish team saying, okay, but you need to be doing this. Now, maybe there's some argument to say that that's unfair, but I would say if he's coming back to the job, he's definitely doing that well. So I don't think he'll be as far removed as
people think. If you think of the timeline for the last World Cup, the preparations began in earnest in 2021. He kind of pivoted towards the World Cup after that. I know COVID affected everything.
Started playing well in 2021.
But even the talk, you know, I'm talking about November 2021 when the All Blacks came to town. Remember they hammered Japan, beat the All Blacks, and should have beaten them much better. Like, they played unbelievable rugby. That's when Ireland started to really. I know it turned in the England Six Nations game, but that's when thoughts started to turn to World Cup. And I don't think you need a 4 year run in. I think that the run in can start post Lions. But the Lions, I think, will mean that he is doing it off of more of a standing start, because he hasn't been in there for every day for last year. So,
although international rugby, in saying that, is far more fit start anyway. Like, isn't it? Because I think, you know, you have these kind of 3 month windows where you're literally just kind of assessing players. You know, like when you're kind of going, okay, well, who's doing that? You know, you might be having a few conversations with senior players who are guaranteed in your squad. But generally speaking, you're going, well, who's playing well? Like, you're going to the matches, you're getting a feel, you're probably doing, like, I would say...
Why does the Lions coach even have to recuse themselves from the two?
Well, they don't, and we're taking it as given that he will because Gatland did it. But David Nusafora did say, when he gave the green light for this, his pre-Christmas briefing, I think he said the RFU would be ecstatic if Andy Farrell got the gig, which I think was stretching things a little bit. But he did say that there's... That's to be worked out.
Whatever about the Six Nations, because I think, you know, the coach can then drop into other camps. Why he would need to not be coaching the Autumn Series, like...
There's nothing to say that he couldn't coach the Six Nations and then go and coach the Lions. It would be controversial, probably, but like, you know, he knows players anyway.
I don't think he will.
I don't think he will, but like, that's it. We're probably making a leap. And would that make you more comfortable with it if he
doesn't
if he did
matter
the
against Australia?
Yeah, no, anyway. Like,
with Joe Schmidt's Australia.
Oh, yeah.
That would be
an unbelievable bit of business by the Aussie. Like, that would be actually a sensible decision by the Aussie Union. Like, that's if they got him, they should go all out for him. Honestly,
Four has gone back in. So the guy, his name's escaped me, but their new performance director is someone who Joe has worked with at World Rugby, and a new Sephora's gone in when he leaves Ireland as an advisor. So there's two people running Australian rugby who are very close to Joe. So there's a lot of speculation. Although Brendan Fanning reported a couple of weeks ago that there's distance, that there's a lot of distance to go, but he doesn't have anything necessarily.
I'd love him to do it. He's too good of a coach, I feel like, to like not be still coaching. You saw him at the World Cup, his fingerprints were all over that.
Yeah.
I was disappointed when he went into that World Rugby kind of advisory role. I would love to see him being back coaching, like...
That was just to keep him from twiddling his thumbs, I'd say, the World Rugby role.
Yeah, but like, I just love to see him with his hands on the team again as a head coach.
Australia would fit very, very nicely for him, I think, because they have a really good healthcare system, which obviously his son has obviously some issues there. So on the family front, it would seem like it would fit. There's a nice lifestyle there in Australia.
It's near New Zealand, obviously.
You can make it's an easy trip across. You also have to think about, like, you can make a massive difference there. Huge difference. Like, because they are coming from such a low ebb. They are really in bad. Like, they're in dire straits from, like, being always world leaders in thinking, in even though they were always competing with cricket, rugby league and Aussie rules, they always were at the forefront of like the game in terms of, you know, particularly backs play, creativity, all that kind of stuff, all the Yellow Brothers, all these brilliant players, Campese's, Liners. They have really fallen off, and it's sad to see, and it's actually not good for rugby. Like, they were always a brilliant, it was a brilliant place to tour, and they were always brilliant in the big competitions. It's sad to see the fall off. Someone like him can make a huge difference. They need to make a big move.
But I wonder, will they appoint Larkham as the head coach and put Joe as an advisor in the kind of All Blacks way?
Larkham seems like he's his own man. I don't know if he's...
Possibly, but I think anyone of his profile would be mad not to take Joe on board as kind of...
But Joe is his own man too, you know.
Yeah, but
you see how that ended up with New Zealand. You see, he ends up like, so that ended up, that started off as, oh, in an advisory role. And then all of a sudden he's in the coach's box and you're like,
I'm doing all the
and it's Joe's footprints on it or Joe's fingers.
Absolutely, but I think that would suit him in terms of not having to come out and face the media all the time or be front and centre. And
also
the
Aussie media. He loves that.
He doesn't. He didn't with the All Blacks. He didn't do one press conference like the World Cup.
But that's probably because maybe he didn't want to be seen, considering the coaching he was doing, to be like too involved. I don't know.
Yeah, but I wonder, will that be...
That would have further undermined Foster. I think that would not have been helpful. And actually, you know, when you think about what he was in there to do, he was brought in there to get the results, because it's such an important thing for them that they were like, right, this is happening. Let's figure out a way to make this work. And like, in fairness to that, most you could see the kind of animosity throughout the process. You know, there was guys not high-fiving him at different points, you know, different things like that during rugby championship and stuff. So like, he was definitely brought in to try and fix that and get a result in the World Cup. Having him out in front of the media, he loved that. As much as it wrecked his head, he likes to be in control of those things and controlling the message. He was trying to control every single part of it. He, to my mind, would be perfect for that job. He is, and he should do the top job. He's got the experience. He loves rugby so much. Like, they have a grassroots issue there. He loves that. He goes down and watches the under-8s on a Sunday morning. Like, he loves rugby. Like, he really, really loves rugby. And I think everything, that fits nicely. It's like how I felt about Farrell coming to the Irish job. It fits him here. The lifestyle fits him here. Yeah. He gets to control the setup here. That's why I knew he was going to stay for the next cycle.
So Joe Schmidt goes, gets the Australia job, brings Kieran Frawley over to Australia, who can then qualify for Australia by the time the World Cup comes around, because it'll be over 3 years from his last cap.
Don't get me started on Frawley.
How much longer will he beam at the end of any given Sunday and goes for a new team? That's the kind of vibes I'm going for here. But it'd be fascinating if it came to pass.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Joe Schmidt, and you know, made the joke about Kieran Frawley there, Joey Carberry obviously announced he's officially leaving Munster. Back in the day, it was kind of that famous photo of Joe and Joey in, like, I think a coffee shop in Middletown, maybe.
Middletown, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
That went viral. It's sad to see. Obviously, like, it's been unfolding over years. Like, you, I know I read you emailed in a piece earlier, a good read, kind of surmising what's gone wrong since basically that injury before the World Cup in 2019. Because his first season in Munster, you know, that Gloucester game you referred to in that piece, like, he was pulling the strings. He looked very good, but the injuries added up. And as you said, when he did get back fit, he wasn't the same player.
No.
I thought he was going to be like an Irish... What, you know, you see Marcus Smith now and what he does in the Premiership, whether they can translate the international level is another point, but that's the player I thought he was going to be, and it just hasn't materialised like
no,
that.
No, and like, you know, Joey Carberry has achieved an awful lot in his career. He's got 37 caps for Ireland. He's beaten the All Blacks 5 times off the bench. You know, he's got a Highland Cup medal. He came off the bench in 2018 finally, won a Pro 14 that year as well. And he's 28 and he's going to be moving to a pretty good club. Like, you know, Bordeaux were leading the chase. You know, I speculated in the piece that, you know, if Farrell moves, could Saracens come and look at him, you know, because he's, you know, he's an experienced international 10 and he just needs a fresh start. But it is sad. It's not the end for him. It could be the beginning. He could go to 2 years abroad. It's never really happened with anyone, but he could go and do 2 years abroad.
Well, Sexton came back to
Edinburgh. But he played the whole way through, didn't he? Like, you know, I'm thinking of Ian Madigan or...
Well, he came back after a tough period there. They overplayed him and it was, I think he was delighted. He was delighted to come back from wrestling. Yeah.
I think this there's no one who's ever gone at 28 and kind of worked their way back in, but that's not to say it couldn't happen. And if he went to Bordeaux, and I've read that he could be replacing Jalibert, when I thought it was, I don't know, is Jalibert on the move? I hadn't missed
there's always a bit of movement in that league, in fairness,
yeah,
isn't there?
But if he's a marquee 10 for like the a Bordeaux team being coached by Noel McNamara, who was his 20s coach, with, you know, unbelievable talent all around them. Pretty much, you know, half the French backline in the team, a really good pack who we all saw in Connacht a couple of weeks ago. There's a chance there with Luku making decisions for him, because I don't think he's not a Sexton-style 10. But if you take the responsibility away from him, I think he'd do well at Ulster, actually, because he'd have Cooney doing a lot of the decision-making for him.
No chance.
Well, I'm not saying he should go there, but I just think having a kind of a petty
general. They need
general,
a structured guy in there, I think.
They do, but like if you.
Sorry,
if
I'm digressing.
Club,
I get the point.
But I think with a French club, he could really thrive because he would have some of the weight. I think in Ireland, especially during the Sexton era, any 10 who came in was expected to be like Sexton. And Joey Carberry's not like Sexton. So I think mentally that was a challenge for him. And then his body just couldn't stand up to the
rigors. His body's the biggest thing.
It is. Like, okay, you know. How is that going to go in France then? Like, it's not as if he's going... But France is a very physical league. They play a huge number of games. The season goes from early August to, I think the final was the end of June last year. Like,
Do you know what as well, Will, though? There's a part of this where you wonder about like strength and conditioning, you know, and they don't obviously do as much of it over in the French league. The games do take a toll. But the like of Johnny Wilkins is probably a good example, where he went over to Toulon and, you know, injury ravaged for about 4 or 5 years post-2003, like just had a nightmare. But then completely galvanised over there by, you know, played loads of games and probably didn't focus as much, had a better lifestyle, more relaxed. Even though you're playing more games, you mightn't be as hard on the strength and conditioning. And sometimes I think over here, because of our system, I think we might overestimate how important it is to play less games. Sometimes hardening the body to play more games could be a good thing for them. Not sure I agree with that. And maybe the strength and conditioners who've done all the research will say that's just not true. But I don't know. I think there's something to be said for playing a lot of rugby. I think it does harden the body, you know.
And I think it's been a stressful couple of years for him.
Yeah.
Mentally,
you know, he sold his house in Limerick and was commuting from Kildare for the last couple of years. The Ireland thing... You know, it's not that long ago since he was starting in that game we mentioned earlier in the Stade de France and played pretty well. You know, he came off the bench in all three tests against the All Blacks. He started against Fiji, got injured in that game, but also played badly. Next week, Crowley starts, Ross Byrne comes on, kicks the winner, and he's not in the Six Nations squad. Yeah. I mean, that must have been an unbelievable gut punch.
Yeah.
And then he ends up watching the URC final from the stands. You know, Ben Healy, who's leaving the place, is picked ahead of him, and Crowley is picked to start. And that's, you know, for Joey Carberry, who... You know, anointed by Graeme Henry at the age of 21, you know, beat the All Blacks on his debut, you know, was talking on the record about being the best player in the world, about usurping Johnny Sexton, who was hounded around Thomond Park in the Christmas of 2018 by Johnny Sexton, who obviously saw him as a legitimate threat because he wouldn't have behaved the way he did that night if he didn't.
I think the talk would annoy Sexton more than
possibly,
anything,
but like there was something real there. For him to be, that fall from grace was so brutal. Start somewhere like Bordeaux. Now, that's not going to be easy. And Ian Madigan could tell you how tough things can get. I think it's a much better club now than it was when he went there.
Well, there was a coaching change midway through Ian's first season, which completely changed the
picture.
But
they were a bit of a basket case back then as well, whereas now they're really well run. They've got great players. It's a lovely place to live.
Yeah.
I think his wife is expecting. It's a chance to just have a new life somewhere else. And he obviously has to learn a language. There's a lot of things he has to do.
The language thing is really tricky, Ruds. Honestly, the language thing, I remember Sexton saying that was really, really difficult. You know, trying to direct the team,
especially
around.
As a 10,
it's like, you know, listening to the calls and actually making them is very, very different.
I think that's where the attack coach being Irish will help as well. Look, he might not necessarily go to Bordeaux, and it's quite a French club. I was watching Toulon in preparation for the Munster game this weekend, and like the Jack Singleton, just like loads of English players. So maybe he should be better off going to Toulon. But I just think that there's a chance there for him to have a new lease of life,
to get
some rugby under his belt, to start enjoying the game again. But I'm not sure he's the same player as he was based on that injury. But
I think staying in Munster
would have been on less money because he's no longer the starting out half. He would have been one of the biggest earners on their books. He's not playing for Ireland anyway. He's definitely right to go.
It's an absolute no-brainer. I love that he's moved. I think it's a really good move for him. I think his race is run. He would have been relying, I think, on Crowley getting a fairly serious injury or having an absolute like collapse in terms of his form, which Crowley doesn't look to me like he's going to do. He looks like he's made for it, to be honest with you. So I think it's a good move for him. I think it's a chance for him to, as you say, reset and get paid well, live in a nice climate, play tough rugby, but I think it could be really good for him. And I think Joey, to me, like I'm, you know my views on that positional change and Graeme Henry after, you know, seeing him for 3 weeks, basically changing the whole course of his career. you know, I would have always thought he was definitely a fullback. But look, that race is definitely run. He's a 10 now, and I think his body won't allow him to be any other position either outside a 10. He's still a really good rugby player. I think he definitely needs some time. He needs time in the pocket, which he never really has had. He's never had 20 or 25 games where he's just, you know, knocked it. Like, he's been there. He's really been, he's played every...
That first Munster season was probably the closest he got.
Yeah. He still had a few niggles there as well.
I mean, I don't think...
They weren't a good Munster team either, though, guys.
And I don't think Van Graan was the right coach for him at that stage of his career. And the game plan, which, look, is working for Bath at the moment, and Finn Russell's thriving in that. For a young out-half to go down there and be asked to play the way that he did, probably... You know, I would wonder now, if you got Joey Carberry, you know, in 5-6 years' time, how would he reflect on the decision to move to Munster? I don't think it's worked out for him. I think staying at Leinster would have been better for his career. I mean, he was in tears talking to us today. He signed for Munster. It was quite troubling, actually. And Joe Schmidt insisted that he had nothing to do with the decision. But, you know, he was starting against Australia 2 weeks later as kind of almost a reward for him. You know, but that was such a pivotal moment. Lancaster really saw him as a fullback. There was a Bowden Barrett / Damien McKenzie.
Damien McKenzie's the player I think of.
But Damien McKenzie's a way better athlete. Damien McKenzie's rapid.
He's not rapid. But he was a lovely fullback.
Nice player.
Watch clips of Joey Carberry's debut for Leinster.
I'm telling you, he's not. He was never fast enough.
2016-17 season. He scores. You watch the try. He scores. Is he as fast as McKenzie? No. But like, it was a comparison. We're not saying they're identical twins. Like,
but that 15-10 kind of getting into matchday squads, being Johnny's backup, playing for Leinster, you know, at the elite end, an environment that wasn't under as much stress and pressure as Munster. Yeah. I just wonder, would he have got injured in the same way?
He's not a big guy anyway, you know, so he's always going to struggle.
If you meet him, he's not a small guy either. Like, he's got a big, he's a much bigger
average, rugby for rugby players. Person, maybe.
He's not a small guy for 10.
He's not. He doesn't look muscle, but he looks to me like he's light, you know, in the body, you know. You feel it around different guys, you know. So, look, I'm going off point. I think it's a good move for him. I completely agree with Jan. I think he could have a big impact at that club too. So hopefully it works out for him, because he's actually one of the good guys too. You know, you hate to see it. Like, you hate to see the tribulations he's gone through, and he really has gone through. And I don't think that, I really don't think that was understated how difficult that period must have been. That was a real fall from grace, like a double good punch, I'd nearly say, to be completely lifted from the squad, you know.
The day he played against Italy in the World Cup warm-ups in 2019, he was outstanding. And he was running a really sharp attack, and he did his ankle.
Yeah.
And then they rushed him to the World Cup. And I've spoken to him about this, and he has taken full responsibility. He said, the coaches didn't make me go. I wanted to go. I said I was fit. But by going there, he lost 18 months of his career and never really got it back. Now, he will say, I got to play the World Cup, and that's the way he looks at it. But I think he would have had a much better career had he just said, look, I'm not going to make this. Let Jack Harty and Ross Byrne be the backups. I'm going to take my time to get back right. And he would have had a much...
He wasn't going to start, but he got rushed back.
The moment I remember from that World Cup for him was kicking the ball off the pitch against Japan, which wasn't on him, but like, it's just the one thing to save a losing bonus point. He wasn't the player, like, he wasn't Joey Carberry at that World Cup, and he's never really been the player that he was before that, ever since. And
that was a very serious injury.
It's risking being quite a sad story, but there's a chance for a really strong, you know, at 28, like Johnny Sexton, he's got 10 years left if you go off Johnny Sexton, not with his injury profile, obviously, but like, he has a chance to have a very strong second half to his career if things go right for him, if he picks the right club, if it goes well for him, if he plays well, if he stays fit. All big ifs, but I think it's the right call.
As you said, if it ends up being Bordeaux, there's a good squad there, like, great back line. You said Maxime Luchu, the kind of replacement to go back for France, you know, kind of drives a lot of their attack, you know, as the French clubs ought to do with a 9. So yeah, it could be a great move for him. So as we said, hopefully he keeps fit. Just to wrap up on, you know, Champions Cup, you know, it feels like we're squeezing the Champions Cup in. It's a great weekend to look forward to. You know, we have 4 Irish matches in a row. It's going to be unbelievable.
All against French opposition as well.
Leon Connacht, followed by Toulon Munster, followed by Leinster Stade, followed by Ulster Toulouse. So it's going to be definitely a day for the couch. But you'll be over in Toulon. Like,
I will, yeah.
What's kind of the big talking point heading into the weekend for you, Champions Cup boys?
Well, I think Ulster Toulouse is probably the shiniest of the 4 matches, but I think Munster in Toulon has a real, well, like, it's a
must win.
It's a knockout game for both teams, because, well, if Munster can probably squeeze through with a bonus, but it makes life tough. Toulon are behind them on the table. They haven't won a game either, but they come very close in both of them. They've been quite unlucky. It's a much tougher pool than I probably accounted for when we were in here.
Because Northampton are the usual cannon fodder of Champions Cup weekends.
And they've been great. Yeah, they've been really good. Like, they just came back from 26-0 down to beat Exeter at the weekend. I hope I'm not confusing that. But that's the game. Well, obviously I'm going to it, but it's the one where there's not most riding on it, because I think Ulster can still lose to Toulouse and beat Harlequins next week. But that's like, I want to see how Ulster can back up that Leinster win. I thought there was a real sense of purpose about them on New Year's Day, which I haven't always seen from Ulster. Like, Timoney's going great guns. Hume is back fit this week. I think Hume is playing the way he was slinging the ball around with such confidence against Racing. That's the James Hume that came onto the scene a couple of years ago. If they can back it up and beat Toulouse at the
big
weekend.
Big step between Racing and Toulouse, though.
Well, Leinster's a nice bridging one in the middle, and their confidence will be up. Three wins in a row. Yeah. Ravenhill, 8 o'clock Saturday night. There's a lot going for them. And Toulouse, while they're much better travellers than a lot of the other teams, and they're trying to target top spot like Leinster are, they don't have to win necessarily. And, you know, they've had a busy period as well. You know, Ulster didn't play last weekend. Big factor for all the Irish teams.
Their full team.
Yeah, big factor, I think, you know. And then Munster, you know, O'Mahony looks like he'll be back. Carberry actually could play as well. He's back on the training pitch this week. And Niall Scannell, if they can get him back on the pitch, that changes everything. Yeah, he's going 80, you know, that's their lineup So, look, their injury list is horrific, Munster. It's a real backs to the wall effort. They just need to get out of that pool.
Toulon
are tough. Toulon are, that's a really tough game. Yeah. And the Mayall is a great. Did you play the Mayall?
Yeah.
It's like the class place to play and class place to go and watch a game.
Heavy pitch, actually, weirdly.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like clay. It's weird. Yeah.
With the fans, the pilu-pilu before the game.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah,
things
yeah,
where
yeah,
they're beating.
Yeah,
I mean, really good. I haven't been there since they regenerated, but like Biggar's back, so like that's a big thing for them. Ollivan's out. I think Leinster will hammer Stad, and I can't see Connacht.
Oh, Stad are definitely setting over a second team at best, probably.
Yeah, and Leon are not going great, but in the top 14, but at home, that's a tough one for Connacht.
Leinster could do it a big performance. Jesus, they could do it a big performance.
Yeah, definitely.
They haven't played
great. They've been very sloppy. What do you think Jack Nienaber in his press conference yesterday saying it'll take 14 weeks for this to bed in? He had a specific time frame. It took 14 weeks at Munster. It took 14 games at South Africa, so ergo 14 weeks.
Did he win at Munster?
No, just to bet in the...
Oh, yeah, well, I love that slot, yeah.
Well, they got the two semi-finals from a position where they hadn't qualified from the pools. Like, season was... And, they looked, and that season with Anthony the Anthony Foley death, that, I think you can deem Razzy Erasmus and Jack Nienaber one season at Munster quite successful, and I'd like to have seen what they would have done with a group of players that wasn't as strong as the one they have now. The 14-week thing, apparently that's what he said to the players when he first came in. That came out via Bernard Jackman.
When does that bring us up doing the Gallagher thing?
I'd say it's the
one
knockouts.
Week after the final.
I think it's the start of the knockouts. And it's quite a clever message to give the players that things are going to go wrong. You're going to make mistakes, but it's going to be all right when we get to this magic period. But one of the things, I mean, not to keep dragging it back to Ireland, but like if he's rewiring the players, which is what he said he's doing. Well, did it have to be rewired again when they go to Portugal next week or the week after the last European game to be, or are Ireland going to try and adapt some of the system? Like that's if it's so fundamentally different to what they've been doing, how difficult is it going to be to flip back to the Ireland system? Consider most of them are going to be playing for Ireland in a couple of weeks' time. That's another factor.
Yeah,
but Luke's right. Like they want to be putting 50, 60 points on the ground if they're sending over a poor team. They want to give the Aviva a show. Because Leo Cullen was really annoyed after the Sale game because their points difference isn't as strong as it should be because they let those two tries in at the end.
Sloppy all through the game.
And their attack hasn't been good. So... No.
But their attack still isn't their issue. Their defense is still their issue, which is kind of concern.
Missing chances as well.
Missing a lot of 22 chances.
Yeah, but it's taking
them like three good chances to score. Like
they're still scoring in the kind of around the 30s. They're still scoring enough to win games. Like you need to be stingy. Like this guy's brought in to fix that issue, in my opinion.
Oh yeah,
and. As far as I can see, it's gotten worse.
14 weeks.
We've got another, 11 weeks, 10 weeks to go. Like, it's pretty rough watching at the moment. Like, I thought Sale cut them up a few times. And they were very unlucky not to get a try at the start of the game, which would have made things even worse. Like, so it was, I don't know. Yeah, I'm a little bit I think he's right. No, he is right that it's going to take time.
What about Rudd's point about, the quote was that I'm rewiring the Leinster players. What about his point about, them going back into Ireland camp, because obviously the French game is only four weeks away or something like that.
Yeah.
Is there will that be a big kind of adjustment then for the Leinster players who are learning this South African style new defensive system to switch back in? They only have 2 weeks in camp, or less than 2 weeks.
I don't think it'll be that much of an issue for them. I think it might actually be beneficial. I think having a new way of thinking is a good thing. And you've got a week before the international start where you can kind of just get back into the routine of things in the Irish squad. I don't see that being an issue. I don't see there's anyone there that doesn't have the mental capacity to switch between the two. And it'll be... The French one might be... you might have some issues, but everyone will have issues at that stage. And I think everyone's doing that. Like the big rewiring, in my opinion, is going to be around the defensive side of things. And I think coming off the line like that is probably something that Ireland are probably trying to implement anyway. So I don't see it as being that much of an issue. It does seem a little bit looser, a little bit more aggressive. But if
the system is as lined as we think it is, you would imagine Andy Farrell would have already had a coffee with him. And I would say Simon Easterby as well, to try and, or even attended a couple of training sessions to get a look at what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm sure Niamh Arbour would like to know more about the Irish system as well. So I'm sure he'd be open to the idea of exchanging ideas with the Irish coaches if the long game spoils.
Is
that not a requirement of a provincial coach?
And especially you're working with the one who's working with, you know, 10 of the starting 15.
But you really think it's a conspiracy of play, don't you? About he's gone back now in 27. But.
Well, he's under contract for what, two or three years. So, I mean, he's never ruled out going back to the Springboks. And look, Ireland will benefit from him being here, I think, and learning about what he does. But if he takes the ideas back, I've talked to senior figures within the South African game who believe that him and Felix Jones will be back in the South African coaches box by 2027. So, look, it's all about ideas, and it's all about kind of gathering information on each other. So
a lot can happen
between now and then. But I do think some players have benefited from him. I think Ryan Baird is looking really, really good right now. And I think he's really bought into what Niamh Arbour's bringing. He's getting off the line really quickly. He could have a big Six Nations. So it's, and like Leinster, I think it's been a bit muddled. And I think that's partly because they had so many at the World Cup. The players are dealing with that disappointment.
Yeah. The head coach didn't have a pre-season.
And the attack coach was off at Samoa for the World Cup as well. There's a lot happening in Leinster. And also, they don't have Johnny Sexton or Ross Byrne, so they're dealing with, and they're chopping and changing that number 10 shirt all the time. So another issue we haven't really talked about is who are going to be the 10s in the Six Nations. You know, is Harry Byrne automatically going to get in there? Does Frawley get in on the basis of what he's done to be the backup to Jack Crowdy? Like, there's so much uncertainty. I would think so, yeah, because Ross Byrne's not going to make it as far as I'm aware. Yeah. But like, there's a lot going on at Leinster that they're trying to bet in, and I think the 14-week thing makes sense, even if you think that he'll have a big block during the Six Nations to work with the fringe players. The other guys will go play Six Nations and then they go attack the end of the season. From a position where they're still top of the pro or the URC, and they're still top of their pool. So it's not going too bad.
Yeah. What do you think about the Frawley situation before we go? Because any thoughts on, like, should he be doing what Joey's doing? Like, what do you think? What's the future for him? What should it look like? I'm looking at this going, what's happened? Like, so he'd won fairly muddled game against Sale, but it's the only one who's actually really started. Like,
I don't think any of them are getting a chance. Harry Byrne's coming off. You know, Harry Byrne's
he's getting the chances. They seem to pick him.
They pick Sam Prendergast against Ulster to give Sam Prendergast an opportunity at a time where I think Harry Byrne, I really like Sam Prendergast and I love seeing him get an opportunity, but I also think Harry Byrne needs to be getting minutes. Like, he needs to be going 80, 80, 80, like Jack Crowley is. He's playing quite well, but then the kick at the end was a bit of a disaster for him. So, on Frawley, like, there's no murmurs about Frawley yet. I don't know what, Leinster don't publish their contract end date, so I'm not entirely sure when he's up. I think he'll be in the Six Nations squad, and I think he will. I think the Australia plan might be scuppered by the fact he's probably a very obvious bench replacement. That versatility gets him into the 22 shirt behind Jack Crowley, so I think he will be capped. But what he does long term, like, if he wants to play 10, he's got to get out of there. Munster are looking, you know, Munster won't have any 10s now. Well, they'd say Jack Crowley.
Crowley's there, surely.
Well, they're Crowley and they have Tony Butler, but like, Butler is still very young.
He looks young, yeah.
They've lost Ben Healy, Joey Carberry, JJ Hanrahan from, you know, the experienced 10s that they have behind Crowley. So there is opportunity going to be there. They may go get Jake Flannery from Ulster, which opens up the door for an Ulster. Ulster makes sense because he'd go up there and probably start. Albeit Billy Burns was brilliant last weekend.
Yeah, he was good, wasn't he? Yeah, I was happy for
him.
So,
like, there is definitely scope for him to go somewhere else and play, but there's no inclination that he wants to.
Yeah, I find that insane. Mm-hmm. Would you sit there in that position?
Well, he's not alone. Like, Max Deegan's sitting there scratching himself while Leinster are playing big games. Like, he's good enough to play.
He's a brilliant player.
Really, any other team in Europe. Frawley, after initially agreeing with you, now my kind of thinking is like,
one game.
The Leinster coaches are watching him every week and they think Harry Byrne is better. So I'm now like not open arms that he's not playing at half. If he was good enough to be playing at half, I'm sure they'd be picking him. Like, if they thought he was the best at half, they'd pick him. Like,
yeah, but if you're never putting him in that position, like, so.
But they're watching him in training, so they probably think, oh, we don't think he's as good as an out half.
They're switching him around, so there's no reason to think that they wouldn't be. And remember where their resources are. Their resources are at 10. They've got three good 10s. Like, so, like, for them, they're trying to pick. They're trying to use their resources to the best of their ability. Like,
but none of them are experienced. Like, I don't really understand the selection strategy of 10 at Leinster at the moment, because, like, Ross, like, you, because Sexton's been there for ages, and Ross Byrne has been the backup to Sexton, who's got loads of minutes while Sexton's injured. The three players who are there have very limited game time in the position.
Yeah.
And yet they're trying to chop and change between them while trying to implement the new defence and trying to fix their attack, which I know you don't think is a big problem, but I don't think it's been functioning very highly at all. Mm. And apart from the concussion, obviously, that Harry Byrne got against La Rochelle was a big issue because he would have started against Sale and got two European games. But I think he needed, I don't understand why you're managing his minutes. Like, he should have played at home and then play him against Ulster. Yeah. Give him the game. Definitely. If he's the guy.
You've got to pick someone. You have to pick someone there.
I understand why you're giving Prendergast minutes for the long term, but you're here now. If you want to win a Heineken Cup, you've got to have.
Training is good enough for him. Training is good enough for Prendergast, I think. And like, you could include him in an Irish squad, but he's there to train. Like, he, to my mind, even you look at his body, like, he's not ready for it. Like, he's not ready for, like, yes,
he benefited from running
up. Yeah, exactly.
He would have wanted him at the World Cup, with the real selection.
That's misquoting me. Scumbag media.
I listened to it. Look, we'll come back in 14 weeks and let's see where we're at.
It's not 14 from now, it's 14 from when he started. So 10, I think we're halfway 10
weeks,
through.
So, 10 weeks, so yeah. But look, there's plenty.
I'll hold you to that, Will.
There's some, geez, we could literally fill another hour. There's so much talking points between Six Nations, Lions, Champions Cup this weekend, but we're going to have to leave it there. Rod, I know you're probably off to catch a flight soon. I don't know if you have London and Toulon.
Yeah, Toulon via London. That's not too bad.
Okay. It'll be your chairmanship. And,
yes, absolutely. Big night tomorrow night. So, looking forward to the weekend. I think it's going to be
It's been a really good tournament so far.
It's been good, and the English showing up has been really important.
I
know none of the Irish teams are playing English opposition, but even the fact that Ireland are playing a Six Nations game in Marseille at the end of the month frames this really, really nicely. Yeah. So it's going to be a tough one, though. I think Leinster will win. If you look, I know you didn't ask for predictions.
Go
I
want
to
it.
Give some. I think Leinster will win. Ulster could win. I can't see Munster or Connacht doing that in France. I mean, like, maybe losing bonus for Munster, but I think that's going to be tough with the injuries that they have.
I think only Leinster win this weekend.
I think Leinster and Ulster win, and I've been burned so badly by Ulster so many times, so many false dawns, but I think they do it this time at home. I think the weather will be crap and I think they'll beat them.
Well, it's going to be a great weekend, and I thank Rory and Luke for joining me in studio on this week's episode of the Left Wing Podcast. We will be back next week with another show, and in the meantime you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.